I'm not sure what you're saying about Mac Office. We develop Mac Office because it's a profitable business for us.
Well, you threatened to cancel Mac Office, did you not, sir?
No.
You never threatened Apple that you were going to cancel Mac Office? Is that your testimony?
That's right.
Did you ever discuss within Microsoft threatening Apple that you were going to cancel Mac Office?
You wouldn't cancel, no.
Let me mark as government exhibit. A document that bears document production stamp 98011-3394. Through 97.
Thank you.
Now let me direct your attention to the second item on the first page of this exhibit. And this purports to be an email from Mr. Waldman to you dated June 27, 1997. Is that correct, sir?
The second one.
Mm-hmm. You have to answer audibly, yes or no, Mr. Gates?
Yes, the second one.
Okay. Now, in the second paragraph of this email to you, the second sentence reads, quote, "The threat to cancel Mac Office 97 is certainly the strongest bargaining point we have, as doing so will do a great deal of harm to Apple immediately." Do you see that, sir?
Mm-hmm.
Do you recall receiving this email in June of 1997?
Not specifically.
Do you have any doubt that you received this email in June of 1997?
No.
Do you know why Mr. Waldman wrote you in June of 1997 that the threat to cancel Mac Office 97 is certainly the strongest bargaining point we have, as doing so will do a great deal of harm to Apple immediately?
Well, Mr. Waldman was in charge of this update. You know, the Mac Office product had been shipping for over a decade by now, and there was a financial question of whether to do this update, and he felt it made good business sense to do it. Other people, irrespective of the relationship with Apple, had said that it didn't make sense to do the update, and so there was some mail from Ben, including this one, where he was saying he thought we should go ahead and finish the product. I'm not sure what he means by about the negotiations with Apple. I'm not sure what we were negotiating with Apple at this point.
Uh, Was this the time that you were negotiating with Apple to try to find out what you could get Apple to do to undermine Sun?
Well, the only email, the only thing you've shown me where that term was used, is after we reached a Mac Office agreement with Apple.
You're referring to your email dated August 8th, 1997, is that correct?
That's right.
That has been marked as Exhibit 365?
That's correct? That's after.
Yes, that's August 8th, 1997.
That's right.
And it is clear from your August 8th, 1997 memo that you are still attempting to get Apple to do additional things. Is it not, sir?
No.
Well, sir, let's read. It's only three lines. You write, quote, "I want to get as much mileage as possible out of our browser and Java relationship here." And when you talk about here, you're talking about with Apple, are you not, sir?
I'm not sure.
Well, the subject of this is FW colon post agreement, correct, sir?
Yeah, that's what makes me think this was probably post agreement.
Post agreement with Apple, right?
Yes.
Okay. So the subject is post agreement with Apple. And the very first sentence says, "I want to get as much mileage as possible out of our browser and Java relationship here." Second sentence says, "In other words, a real advantage against Sun and Netscape." The third line says, "Who should AV be working with? Do we have a clear plan on what we want Apple to do to undermine Sun?" Now, do you have any doubt that when you talk about, "I want to get as much mileage as possible out of our browser and Java relationship here," you're talking about Apple?
That's what it appears.
Okay. Do you have any recollection of any discussions about the subject matter of this email in or about August of 1997? If the question is confusing, I'd be happy to rephrase it, Mr. Gates.
Go ahead.
Did you send this email?
It appears I did.
Did you discuss this email with anyone?
I don't remember that.
Let me go back to Exhibit 368. Which is the June 27th, 1997 email from Mr. Waldman to you. Do you recall, and I know you said you don't recall receiving this email, but do you recall anyone describing the threat to cancel Mac Office 97 as a bargaining point that you have in dealing with Apple in or about June of 1997?
I remember going to a meeting where Paul Moritz took the position that we shouldn't do the update, and the Mac Office 97 update, and the main negotiation we had with Apple at this point was a discussion about a patent cross-license. And so I said to Paul I wanted to understand better where we were on the patent cross-license and understand the state of the Mac Office development. And then it appears that this is an email that's coming after that meeting. I don't remember somebody using those exact words.
Whether you remember somebody using the exact words that Mr. Waldman uses in his June 27, 1997 email to you, do you remember people telling you in substance that the threat to cancel Mac Office 97 was a strong bargaining point that you had against Apple, and that canceling Mac Office 97 would do a great deal of harm to Apple immediately?
I know there was the internal debate about whether to do the update, and I know there was the patent discussion going on, and I said that maybe even if it didn't make business sense to do the update, maybe as part of an overall relationship with the patent cross-license, that we should go ahead and do it. And so a commitment to do the upgrade was one of the things that we told Apple we might commit to as part of the patent cross license relationship.
And did you believe in 1997 that canceling Mac Office 97 would do a great deal of harm to Apple? As Mr. Waldman writes you, it would?
There was a question about whether to do the upgrade and whether it made business sense. I can't really say how much impact it would have on Apple of us doing the upgrade or not. Certainly Ben, as the person in charge of the upgrade, was very passionate about its importance and its dramatic nature.
My question to you now, sir, is whether you believed that canceling Mac Office 97 would do a great deal of harm to Apple.
Well, I know that Apple would prefer that we have a more updated version of Mac Office, that would be a positive thing for them. And so that's why it was part of the negotiation relative to the patent cross-license.
And did you believe that canceling Mac Office 97 would do a great deal of harm to Apple?
I told you I think it would be it'd be better for Apple to have everybody doing major upgrades like this. I can't characterize the level of benefit of the upgrade to Apple, but certainly it's something they wanted us to complete.
The next sentence in Mr. Waldman's June 27, 1997 email to you begins, "I also believe that Apple is taking this threat pretty seriously. Did someone tell you in or about June of 1997 that Apple was taking Microsoft's threat to cancel MacOffice 97 seriously, or pretty seriously?
Well, Moritz had taken the position that it didn't make business sense to finish this upgrade. And it's very possible Apple might have heard about Moritz's opinion there and therefore been worried that we business-wise didn't see a reason to complete the upgrade and that they would have the older Mac Office as opposed to this new work that we were partway along on.
Mr. Gates, my question is not what position Mr. Moritz did or did not take. My question is whether anyone told you in or about June of 1997 that Apple was taking pretty seriously Microsoft's threat to cancel MacOffice 97.
Apple may have known that senior executives at Microsoft, Moritz in particular, thought that it didn't make business sense to complete that upgrade.
Mr. Gates, I'm not asking you what Apple may have known or may not have known. What I'm asking you is whether anybody told you in or about June of 1997 that Apple was taking pretty seriously Microsoft's threat to cancel MacOffice 97.
Those particular words?
Told you that in words or in substance?
I think I remember hearing that Apple had heard about Moritz's view that it didn't make sense to continue the upgrade, but and that they wanted us to continue the upgrade. But I don't remember any of the it being phrased at all the way you're phrasing it.
Well, the way I'm phrasing it is the way that Mr. Waldman phrased it to you in his email of June 27th, 1997. Correct, sir?
Well, in reading it, I see those words, yes.
Yes. And you don't have any doubt that you received this email, do you, sir?
I have no reason to doubt it. I don't remember receiving it. I do remember, in general, sending an email like the one that's at the top there.
Do you recall anyone telling you in words or in substance in or about June of 1997 what Mr. Waldman is writing here in this email?
And this is a very long piece of email. Have you read the whole email yourself?
All right. I think my question was imprecise. I was probably trying to avoid quoting something for yet another time, but I think I accept your counsel's view that the question was probably defective. I thought it was clear what portion of the email we were talking about, but I will make it clear. Mr. Gates, Mr. Waldman, on June 27, 1997, sends you an email that says, "The threat to cancel MacOffice 97 is certainly the strongest bargaining point we have, as doing so will do a great deal of harm to Apple immediately. I also believe that Apple is taking this threat pretty seriously." Close quote. Do you recall anyone...
Do you want to finish the sentence or not?
You can if you think it is necessary to answer the question. Do you recall anyone telling you what I have just quoted in words or in substance in or about June of 1997?
No.
In the period of 1996 forward, after you concluded that Java, or as you put it, the Java runtime threat and Netscape were competitive threats to Microsoft. What were your goals in terms of dealing with Apple? What were you trying to get Apple to agree to do for Microsoft?
Well, the main reasons we were having discussions with Apple in this 97 period was that they had asserted that various patents that they had applied to various Microsoft products. And so our primary focus in discussing an agreement with them was to conclude a patent cross-license of some kind.
I want to be sure that the question and answer are meeting. I asked for a period of 1996 to the present. You answered about 1997. Were your goals in 1996 or after 1997 any different than the goals that you've just described in dealing with Apple?
There's only one agreement with Apple, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. Do you understand the word goals or objectives?
You talked about agreeing with Apple. There's only one agreement with Apple that I know about that we're discussing, and that was one that was concluded in, I think, late July or early August 1997. And there's no other agreement that I know was even discussed or considered.
Okay. Let me ask you to look at a document previously marked as Government Exhibit 369.
Thank you.
The second item on the first page of this exhibit purports to be an email from you dated June 23, 1996 to Paul Moritz and Brad Silverberg with copies to Messrs. Higgins, Bradford, Waldman, and Ludwig on the subject of, quote, Apple meeting, close quote. Did you send this email, Mr. Gates, on or about June 23, 1996?
I don't remember it specifically, but I don't have any reason to doubt that I did.
In the second paragraph, you say, quote, I have two key goals in investing in the Apple relationship. One, maintain our applications share on the platform, and two, see if we can get them to embrace Internet Explorer in some way, close quote. Do you see that?
Yeah.
Does that refresh your recollection as to what your two key goals were in connection with Apple in June of 1996?
Well, first of all, June of 1996 is not in the time frame that your previous question related to. And certainly, in the email to this group, I'm not talking about the patent thing, but believe me, it was our top goal in thinking about Apple for many, many years because of their assertions.
My time frame and my question, sir, was the time frame beginning in 1996 when you began to view Netscape or the Java runtime threat as a competitive threat to Microsoft.
And that was after June of 1996.
Is it your testimony that in June of 1996 you did not consider Netscape to be a competitive threat to Microsoft?
Netscape was a competitor, but in terms of Java and all the runtime-related issues, we didn't have a clear view of that at all.
So that, I want to be sure I've got your testimony accurately. It is your testimony that in June of 1996, you considered Netscape to be a competitive threat, but you did not consider Java or Java runtime to be a competitive threat. Is that your testimony?
We considered Netscape to be a competitor, and I told you earlier that until late 96 we were unclear about our position on various Java runtime things and what other companies were doing and what that meant for us competitively.
Do you agree that in June of 1996, the two key goals that you had in terms of the Apple relationship were, quote, one, maintain our applications share on the platform, and two, see if you could get Apple to embrace Internet Explorer in some way?
No.
Do you have any explanation for why you would have written to Mr. Moritz and Mr. Silverberg on June 23, 1996, that those were your two key goals in the Apple relationship?
No, they weren't involved in the patent issue at all. So when I write to them, I'm focused on the issues that relate to them. I do mention patents in here, but that certainly was the primary goal at this time and in subsequent times.
Let me be clear. When you write to Mr. Moritz and Mr. Silverberg, you talk about patents, do you not, sir?
Where do you see that?
Well, did you talk about patents?
Do you want me to read the mail, the entire mail?
Have you read it enough to know whether you talk about patents?
I saw the word patent in one place. If I read the whole thing, I can find out if it's in other places as well.
Okay. You do talk about patent cross-license, do you not, in this memo? And if you want to look at the last page, five lines from the bottom.
Yeah, they weren't involved in the patent issues at all. So it looks like in this mail I just mentioned that in a summary part. But it was our top goal in our discussions with Apple.
Now, when you write to Mr. Moritz and Mr. Silverberg, you don't describe that as your top goal. In fact, you don't even describe it as one of your two or three key goals, correct, sir?
This piece of email doesn't talk about the patent goal as the top goal. It's most likely that's because the people copied on the mail don't have a thing to do with it, and I wouldn't distract them with it.
I want to be sure I have your testimony correct. In June of 1996, what was Paul Moritz's title?
He was involved in product development activities.
He was involved in product development activities. What was his title?
I don't know. Systems?
Systems?
Mm-hmm.
Did he have a title that went with that?
Senior Vice President Systems?
Senior Vice President Systems. I see. Did Mr. Silverberg have a position in June of 1996?
He worked for Mr. Moritz.
Did he have a title?
I don't know what his title was at the time. He would have been an officer of some kind.
An officer of some kind. So you're writing a memo to Paul Moritz, a senior vice president, and Brad Silverberg, an officer of some kind, and you're sending copies to four other people on the subject of the Apple meeting. And you say, I have two key goals in investing in the Apple relationship.
That's quite distinct than any goals I might have for a deal with Apple. It says, I have two key goals in investing in the Apple relationship. Not, I have two key goals for a deal with Apple.
Well, sir, at the bottom you say, what you propose in terms of a deal, and you talk about what Apple will get out of the deal and what Microsoft will get out of the deal. Correct, sir?
Do you want me to read you the email? I mean, I don't know anything more than just what it says in the email. I'm glad to read it to you.
Well, sir, does it say at the bottom of the email that you are proposing something with Apple, and you are identifying what Apple would get under your proposed deal and what Microsoft would get under your proposed deal?
Yeah, that's the bottom of the email.
In fact, the bottom of the email, talking about a proposed Apple-Microsoft deal, you say, quote, the deal would look like this. And then you've got a column Apple gets and a column Microsoft gets and a column both gets. Right, sir?
I'm reading that.
Okay. Now, in this email of a page or a page and a half, in which you are proposing this deal, you describe your two key goals as maintaining Microsoft's applications share on the platform and getting Apple to embrace Internet Explorer.
Now that's wrong.
That's wrong, okay.
The word deal and the word relationship are not the same word. This says I have two key goals in investing in the Apple relationship. This down here is an agreement which I thought we could reach with Apple.
And is it your testimony here today under oath that your two key goals in investing in the Apple relationship, which you mentioned at the second paragraph of this email, is different than your two key goals in the proposed deal that you describe five paragraphs later?
I don't see anything in here about the key goals, two key goals in the deal. I've told you that I'm certain that my primary goal in any deal was the patent cross-license.
Mr. Gates, my question is whether it is your testimony today here under oath that when you talk about your two key goals in investing in the Apple relationship in the second paragraph of this email, that is different than what your key goals were in the deal that you propose five paragraphs later.
That's right. Investing in the relationship is different than the deal.
Now, you don't tell Mr. Moritz or Mr. Silverberg that your goals for investing in the Apple relationship are different than your goals in the proposed deal, do you, sir?
But the goals in the deal are quite different, so obviously they would have known they were quite different.
Well, sir, you say the goals and the deal are quite different. One of your two key goals that you talk about in your first in your second paragraph is to get Apple to embrace Internet Explorer in some way. And the very first thing under what Microsoft gets in your proposed deal is, quote, Apple endorses Microsoft Internet Explorer technology. Do you see that, sir?
Mm-hmm.
Now, does that refresh your recollection that the deal that you were proposing had some relationship to the two key goals that you were identifying?
Some relationship, yes, but they aren't the same thing at all.
All right, sir. You ever prepare any email to anyone, Mr. Moritz or Mr. Silverberg or anyone, in which you said that your primary goal in an Apple deal was obtaining a cross license?
I don't remember a specific piece of email, but I'm sure I did with at least Mr. Maffei and Mr. Moritz.
You were sure that you sent them email saying that?
I'm sure I communicated it to them in some way.
Do you believe you sent them anything in writing or an email?
I think it's likely, but I don't remember a specific document.
Okay. You certainly haven't seen any such a document in being prepared for your deposition. Is that fair?
I didn't say anything about what may or may not exist at this point. I said that I'm sure I communicated to Mr. Moritz and Mr. Maffei that our primary goal in doing the deal with Apple was the patent cross-license.
And I had thought, and perhaps I misunderstood, I had thought that you had said that you believed that you'd actually communicated that, not merely orally, but by email or in writing.
I think it's likely that I communicated it in email.
And if you'd communicated an email, would that email have been preserved?
Not necessarily.
A lot of these emails were preserved, because we now have copies of them, right?
That's right.
How did Microsoft decide what emails would be preserved and what emails would not be preserved?
Individuals get email into their mailbox and they decide.
Have any explanation as to why people would have decided to keep the email that described your two key goals in the Apple relationship as being what they are stated to be here, and not have preserved your email that you say you sent saying that you had a primary goal of a cross-license?
Objection. Your lack of foundation. Hold it.
I'll restate the question to just be absolutely certain that it's a fair question, Mr. Gates. If it were the case that neither your counsel nor myself, after diligent search, can find an email that says your primary goal in dealing with Apple was a patent cross-license, do you have any explanation as to why that email that you say think exists would not have been saved, whereas the email that describes one of your two key goals as getting Apple to embrace Internet Explorer was preserved?
Objection.
Well, when you say dealing with Apple, there were a lot of things we were dealing with Apple on. I've told you in terms of the deal that I was involved in discussing in 96 and under another management, Apple, in 97. There's no doubt the primary goal was the patent cross-license.
And by the primary goal, what you mean is the primary goal that you and Mr. Gates had. Is that correct?
I don't think I'm the only one who had it, but certainly yes, that was the primary goal of myself and for the company.
And when you said in your June 23, 1996 email, quote, "I have two key goals in investing in the Apple relationship," close quote, you were talking about yourself personally. Is that correct?
Yeah, when I say investing in the Apple relationship, that means spending time with Apple and growing the relationship.
And when in describing the deal, five paragraphs later, the very first thing that Microsoft gets is, quote, "Apple endorses Microsoft Internet Explorer technology," close quote. Did that indicate to you that that was an important part of what you were getting in terms of the deal?
No such deal was ever struck, so I'm not sure what you're saying.
Was that an important part of the deal that you were trying to get, sir?
We never got as far as trying to get that deal, unfortunately.
You never got as far as trying to get that deal? Is that what you're saying?
No. Well, in this time frame, Gil Amelio's total focus was on his new OS strategy. And so what I outlined here, we never got them to consider.
Well, sir, your email begins, "Last Tuesday night, I went down to address the top Apple executives." Correct, sir?
That's right.
And down at the bottom, when you're introducing the deal, you say, quote, "I proposed." Now, you're referring to what you proposed to the Apple top executives, are you not, sir?
Yes.
Okay. And what you proposed was, quote, "the deal" that you then describe at the bottom of the first page and the top of the second page, correct, sir?
That's right.
And that was a deal that you proposed the Tuesday night before June 23, 1996, to what you describe as the top Apple executives. Correct, sir?
I put forward some of those points.
Well, you put them forward and you describe them as proposing a deal. Correct, sir?
That's how I describe it here, yes.
All right, sir. Now, you said that the deal that you were talking about never got done. Did you ever get Apple to endorse Microsoft Internet Explorer technology?
You're trying to just read part of that?
What I'm doing is I'm asking a question right now, sir. I'm asking whether in 1996 or otherwise, at any time, did you get Apple to endorse Microsoft Internet Explorer technology?
Well, you can get a copy of the agreement we reached with Apple and decide if in reading that you think it meets that criteria or not.
Sir, I'm asking you as the chief executive officer of Microsoft, I'm asking you whether that objective.
We did not get some exclusive endorsement. We did get there's some part of the deal that has to do with Internet Explorer technology.
Do you know what that part of the deal is?
Not really. It has something to do with they'll at least ship it along with other browsers.
Does the deal prohibit them from shipping Netscape's browser without also shipping Internet Explorer?
I'd have to look at the deal to understand.
It is your testimony sitting here today under oath that you simply don't know one way or the other whether Apple is today free to ship Netscape's browser without also shipping Internet Explorer?
That's right.
When you identify things as key goals, do you typically tend to follow up and see to what extent those goals have been achieved?
In a very general sense, yes.
Did you ever follow up to see whether one of the two key goals that you identify in your 1996 email to Mr. Moritz and Mr. Silverberg and others of getting Apple to embrace internet technology in some way had been achieved?
Well, certainly what I said here, I have two goals in investing in the app relationship. Those weren't achieved because the investments I made were with Gil Amelio, who was fired from Apple very soon thereafter.
Was there something about Mr. Amelio getting fired that changed what your goals were for the Apple relationship?
I said I have two key goals in investing in the Apple relationship. The form that investment took was spending time with Gil Amelio. That turned out to be wasted time because he was fired from Apple rather abruptly within about 8 months of this.
When he was fired, did that change what goals you had for the Apple relationship, Mr. Gates?
It was basically a complete restart because we had to understand what the new management, what they were going to do with Apple and where they were going.
Did your goals change?
Goals for what? For
the
investing in the relationship?
You say in this email that you have two key goals for investing in the Apple relationship. One of them is to get Apple to embrace internet technology in some way. What I'm asking you is whether that changed after this person got fired.
We reevaluated all of our thoughts about working with Apple based on what the new management was going to do, where they were going to target the machines, what they were going to do with their machines. Since they continued to say that we were in violation of their patents, it continued to be our top goal to get some type of patent cross-license.
You better read the whole question. And then again, reincorporate it so that it's clear from the record.
You say in this email you have two key goals for investing in the active relationship. Investing in the active relationship question. One of them is to get Apple to embrace internet technology in some way. What I'm asking you is whether that changed after this person got fired.
You keep, either intentionally or unintentionally, trying to confuse my goals for investing in the relationship with the goals we had overall for various dealings with Apple. Certainly the goals I had for investing in the relationship, that I had to start over and rethink, because the investment was to spend time with the CEO who had been fired.
Mr. Gates, neither in this email nor in any other a document that either of us is aware of, do you make that distinction that you're making now, correct? Do you understand the question I'm asking you?
This document does not say that my goals for dealing does not state my goals for dealing with Apple up here. It states my goals in investing in the Apple relationship. So there's a clear distinction right there in that document.
Mr. Gates, this document deals with a proposed deal that you made to top Apple executives.
That's only one part of what's in the document.
Right.
There's a part where it talks about, you never mentioned it, but the first goal is maintain our application share on the platform. That's something that I'm doing in investing in the Apple relationship. That's not related to the deal that's given, the proposed deal that's discussed below in the email. So those are clearly two separate things. Related, but separate.
What I think I've done is I think I have mentioned the first goal a number of times.
I don't think so.
I think it's been read about three times in the record, and the record will show it.
Okay. That's a point of disagreement.
Okay. My question, Mr. Gates, has to do with what your goals were, what your stated goals were. Now, you say here, I have two key goals in investing in the Apple relationship, one of which was to get Apple to embrace Internet Explorer technology in some way. Did that continue to be a goal that you had after 1996?
It wasn't a goal in investing in the Apple relationship in the sense I meant it here. It was a goal for our overall dealing with Apple.
Okay.
One of many.
Okay. Was it a key goal?
I'm not sure what you mean by key goal. It was a goal.
What I mean by key goal is what you meant by key goal in your June 23, 1996 email, Mr. Gates.
That's about investing in the app relationship, which meant spending time with Gil Amelio. So I don't know why you can take the word out of there and apply it to a completely different context.
Well, sir, when you say a completely different context, let's be clear about what we're talking about. The completely different context that you're talking about is the difference between investing in the Apple relationship and doing a deal with Apple. Is that what you're saying?
No, we have goals for our general dealing with Apple, which came to a deal. We actually reached a deal either in late July 97 or early August. But there's a separate thing of what was that deal, what were we able to achieve in it, what were we trying to achieve when we were negotiating with the previous management a deal, and what I'm trying to do in terms of spending my time investing in the Apple relationship.
And what you're saying is it is your testimony under oath that, although you can't recall actually having sent this email, you're confident that when you wrote this and referred to investing in the Apple relationship, you meant only what you expected to get out of spending time with the Apple executives. Is that your testimony?
Yeah, I was explaining why I was spending time with Gil Amelio.
And that's all you meant to be saying here, is your testimony.
That's in reading this, that's what I believe I was trying to communicate to the recipients of the email.
All right, sir. Let me ask you to look at a document previously marked as Government Exhibit 370. This purports to be an email, and the second item on the email is an email from John Ludwig to Don Bradford, dated August 21, 1997, and the subject is Conversations with Bill G. Last Night. And the Bill G. referred to there is you, correct, sir?
Yes.
And it begins, I was at the exec staff meeting last night. And can you explain for the record what the exec staff meeting was?
He's referring to a regular get-together four times a year of the Microsoft executive staff.
And he goes on to say that there were three interesting exchanges with Bill and the whole group about Apple. Do you see that?
I see it.
And number one is, quote, Bill's top priority is for us to get the browser in the October OS release from Apple. We should do whatever it takes to make this happen. If we are getting shut out, we should escalate to Bill. You should make sure that we are engaging deeply with Apple on this one and resolving any and all issues, close quote. Do you recall conveying to your executive staff in or about August of 1997 that your top priority was to get Microsoft's browser in the October OS release from Apple?
No, I don't recall that.
The top email, which is from Don Bradford to a number of people, dated August 21, 1997, and is also on the subject of, quote, conversations with Bill G. last night, close quote, says that Mr. Bradford and someone else, Mohan Thomas, quote, will take the lead on working out the Apple bundle deal, close quote. Do you see that?
Yes.
Did you instruct your executive staff in or about August of 1997 to work out a, quote, Apple bundle deal, close quote?
I think this is post the August agreement, or late July or August, early August agreement we reached with Apple. And I think there were some circumstances under which they would include or bundle IE with some of their shipments. I think that's what that's referring to.
And And is that what your present recollection is that you told your executive staff in August of 1997?
Well, I don't recall specifically what I said to the executive staff about Apple, but it appears Ludwig took out of that that he was supposed to make sure that whatever outs that Apple had under the previous agreement for not shipping our technology, that we avoided those being a problem that prevented them from shipping our technology.
Well, Apple wasn't prohibited from shipping your technology in August of 1997, was it, sir?
No, I actually think there was, if we, I don't know the Apple agreement, I haven't read it, but I think there's something in there that if we got certain things done and if there were no problems and it passed tests and we were ready in time, that they would actually affirmatively include some of our technology in various OS releases. And this appears to be a discussion about whether or not we're going to be able to meet the requirements on us related to that.
It is clear that getting the browser in the October OS release from Apple was something that you, Bill Gates, and Microsoft wanted. Correct, sir?
Yes, that's something that we wanted.
Okay. The last sentence of the second paragraph says Bill was clear that his whole goal here is to keep Apple and Sun split. He doesn't care that much about being aligned with Apple. He just wants them split from other potential allies. And that relates to Java, does it not, sir?
I don't have a direct recollection, but if you read the sentence in front of it, that paragraph seems to relate to Java runtime.
Now, do you have a recollection of telling your executive staff in or about August 21 that your whole goal with respect to Apple relating to Java runtime was to keep Apple and Sun split?
No.
Who is at this executive staff meeting?
Probably members of the executive staff.
And who were they?
It's about 40 to 50 people. I doubt you want to take the time for me to guess. We generally get about 70% attendance. Looking at this document, I think it's very likely that I was there and John Ludwig was there. But as to the rest of the executive staff, I'd just be guessing. It's very rare for us to have non-executive staff members at those meetings, although sometimes it happens.
Is Mr. Ludwig somebody who you believe is an honest and competent person?
In general, yes.
Do you have any reason to believe that he would make up anything about what your statements were?
No.
Let me ask you to look at a document that has been previously marked as a Government Exhibit 371. The portion that I'm particularly interested in is in the second email that is in this exhibit, which is on the first page, and it is an email from you to Paul Moritz and others, dated January 22, 1998. Did you send this email on or about January 22, 1998?
I don't remember doing so, but I have no reason to doubt that I did.
The next to last sentence says, quote, "I think we can gain a lot of share with IE on Mac if we do some modest things," close quote. Why were you interested in January 1998 of increasing IE's share on Mac, as you describe it?
Well, I'm not sure what I was thinking in particular when I wrote this mail, but I can, you know, sitting here now, I can give you some reasons that I think I would have had for saying that.
Okay. Would you do so, please?
Well, the use of IE on Macintosh was beneficial to us in terms of our the APIs we had there and the content HTML extensions that we had there. And when you go to people who do content, being able to say to them that those extensions are popular not only with PC users but Mac users makes it easier to convince the content person to take unique advantage of the innovations that we've made in HTML, as well as some of the innovations we've made in how the browser was structured.
I want to be sure I understand your answer. You mentioned APIs and you mentioned the HTML extensions. Are those two different things?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And am I correct that the broader distribution of the APIs is something that makes writing to those APIs more attractive to independent software writers?
If users are choosing to use the software that those APIs are present in, it makes it easier to convince software vendors to write to those APIs.
Let me ask the question this way. Why were you interested in having Apple distribute your APIs? Objection.
Well, the key issue wasn't about distribution at all. The key issue was usage share by Mac users of the various browsers that were available on the Macintosh.
Why were you interested in having the usage share of Mac users of your APIs increase?
That question is nonsensical.
Okay. You were asked earlier why you wanted to increase your share of IE on Mac. Do you recall that?
Yes.
And am I correct that you said that there were two reasons, one dealt with APIs and one dealt with HTML extensions?
Yeah, I've thought of a third reason since then, but that's right.
Okay.
You might not remember.
Now there might be three or four.
Why don't you tell me the one that you're thinking of, and we'll see if it's the same one Mr. Heiner's thinking of.
Well, I've talked earlier about having traffic out of IE is always of value.
So those are the three reasons that you can think of now. Is that correct?
Those are three reasons that are among the good reasons that raising usage share of IE on Macintosh was a positive thing for Microsoft.
I'd like to know the other reasons that you can think of now, if there are other reasons.
That's all I can think of right now.
Okay. why does increasing IE share on Mac help you with respect to APIs?
Because the Mac IE had APIs.
And how does having that help Microsoft?
Because those APIs are in common with some Windows APIs.
And why does that help Microsoft?
If we do things that make our APIs in Windows more attractive, it helps us in increasing the volume of Windows that we license.
Are you saying that increasing IE share on Mac will help increase the number of Windows that you license?
Yeah, I went through the chain of logic that explains that to you. I don't know if you misunderstood some part of it.
All I'm trying to do is get your answers on the record, because if I begin to tell you what I think about your answers, we'll be here all day. So am I correct that it is your testimony here that increasing your share of IE on Mac will increase the distribution of Windows?
I don't know what you mean by distribution of Windows.
The usage of Windows.
No, the number of copies that we license.
Will that be increased?
Through the indirect factors that I explained to you, yes. Okay. There's a positive effect there.
So that by increasing your share of IE on Mac, you would expect to increase the number of copies of Windows that you would license.
Yeah, increasing our usage share over time, we think will help us to increase the number of copies of Windows we'll license.
Does increasing IE's share on Mac make it more likely that content providers will want to use IE?
I don't know what you mean by content providers using IE. Content providers use servers. They don't use clients.
Do you know what content providers are?
Yes.
Give me an example of a content provider. Disney?
Disney
would be a content provider. Disney is an important content provider, correct, sir?
Now you're going to have to give me some context.
Without me giving you some context, you can't answer the question as to whether Disney is an important content provider. Is that your testimony under oath?
Important in what sense?
Important in the everyday, common usage sense of what important means. Mr. Borsley, I think probably the word content providers was not used, but the word content was used by the witness, and I think it was in...
If you're actually interested, it's the use IE where you seem to be confused about what content providers do. There's no question about what content provider means. When you say use IE, it's people who view content who use IE.
Right. And in order for somebody to view content through IE, that content has to be put someplace to begin with, right?
Yes.
And one of the things that Microsoft has tried to do is it has tried to convince content providers to put content places and in a way so that it was more attractive to view that content using IE than with Netscape's browser. Correct, sir?
It's not the places that make it attractive. It's the way they use the HTML.
What you've tried to do, what Microsoft has tried to do, is get content providers to display information in a way that would make it more attractive to a user to view that content using IE than using Netscape Navigator. Correct, sir?
No, we've tried to get them to author it in a way that they exploit our HTML extensions. Author.
And is the effect of that to make it more attractive for users to view the content using IE than Netscape Navigator?
Totally depends on what they do, what Netscape Navigator does with HTML extensions, and what that content provider does with those HTML extensions.
Let me ask what I think is a simple question. Has Microsoft made an effort to get content providers to agree to display information in a way that makes that information more attractive when viewed by the then existing Internet Explorer than if viewed by the then existing Netscape browser?
Our efforts have been focused in getting them to author so that it looks good in Internet Explorer. These people are authors. They don't do display. They do authoring.
Let me try to use your words, and maybe that will move it along. Have you tried, has Microsoft tried, to get content providers to agree to, in your words, author information and data in a way so that that information and data is more attractive to users when viewed through the then current version of Internet Explorer than when viewed through the then current version of Netscape's browser?
Our attempts to convince people to author using our extensions is not relative to Netscape. It's just a question of, can we convince them to use our extensions? And yes, we have endeavored to convince them to use our extensions, but that doesn't say anything about what they're doing or how that stuff looks in Netscape.
Are you saying that your effort to convince content providers to use your extensions was unrelated to what the effect would be on Netscape?
The effect on Netscape would be indirect. Our intent in doing that was to increase the popularity of our products.
Was part of your objective also to decrease the popularity of Netscape products?
Our intent was to increase the popularity of our products.
I'm now asking a different question, and you, the answer may be simply no. But I'd like to have an answer to my question, which is that in addition to trying, as you say you were trying to do, increase the popularity of your products, were you also trying to decrease the popularity of Netscape products?
All of our effort was aimed at making our product more popular. There may have been an indirect effort on in terms of their people choosing our product over other people's products, but the focus is on making our product more attractive.
Did you enter into agreements with content providers that limited the ability of those content providers to make their content more attractive when viewed through Netscape's then current browser?
I'm not familiar with agreements that we had with content providers.
You're not familiar with them at all? Is that what you're saying?
I know that we had some, so I'm familiar with their existence. I've never read one. I've never seen one. I've never negotiated one.
Have you ever discussed with anyone the substance of what's in them?
What I know about them is that they they're related to the efforts to convince people to take advantage of extensions we've done that make those extensions worthwhile to end users.
My question now is whether you've ever discussed the substance of what's in those agreements with anyone, and if you have, I'll try
to the degree I just described them, yes. Beyond that, no.
With whom did you have those discussions?
Well, I would have been in meetings with various people. Brad Chase, Paul Moritz, Brad Silverberg in a certain period of time.
And did they ever tell you that these agreements with content providers limited what the content providers could do with Netscape?
I don't think so.
Do you know, as you sit here now, whether any of the agreements that you entered into, Microsoft entered into with content providers over the last 3 years, limited what those content providers could do with Netscape?
That when I was going to testify in Washington, D.C. in the Senate, that Netscape or someone agreements in an effort to create some controversy around them. And so I was given like a paragraph or two summary. And there were about 40 issues in general there, but one of the issues was the related to those agreements. And so there may have been something in those paragraphs about the agreements beyond what I knew about them earlier.
But you don't recall the substance of that now, is that what you're saying?
Well, I can tell you there was something about in a period of time a certain class who was on our channel bar, they could appear on competitive channel bars, but if they could only pay us, there was something like that.
Yeah, that's an interesting one for you to focus on. Can you think of any reason why you would want content providers to agree that they would not pay Netscape any money?
I know that we had hopes that the channel bar would get some usage, and we wanted to work with some content providers to show off the channel bar. And I can't give you the reasoning behind any part of the ICP agreement because I wasn't involved in those.
What I'm asking you now is whether you, as you sit here now, can think of any legitimate reason why Microsoft would be getting content providers to agree not to pay Netscape. I'm not talking about getting them to try to use your channel bar. I'm talking about getting them to agree not to pay Netscape.
You'd have to ask somebody else why they put that in the agreement, unless you're asking me to just speculate wildly.
Well, I don't know whether it would be wild speculation or not, but what I'm asking you is whether you, as you sit here now as the chief executive of Microsoft, can think of any legitimate reason for Microsoft getting content providers to agree not to pay Netscape.
Yeah, I'm not aware of any broad prohibition against paying Netscape for anything. I think there was something about relative to the channel bar, we wanted some of the premier partners, which was a very small number, to talk about their work with us, and it would have been embarrassing if all those same people were in the same relationship with Netscape in that time period.
In your answer, in which you said that you thought you recalled some of the things that you were told in preparation for your hearing testimony, you were the one, were you not, just a few minutes ago, who said that you recalled that there was some provision that even if the content provider was on another channel bar, they couldn't pay for it. Do you recall saying that just a few minutes ago?
Mm-hmm.
You've got to say yes for the report.
Yes.
Now, that's what I'm asking about. What I'm asking is whether you can think of any legitimate reason why Microsoft would get a content provider to agree not to pay Netscape.
I can guess about that if you want.
What I'm asking it is not whether you can guess why you did it, because we could all guess maybe why you did it. What I'm asking is whether you can think of any legitimate reason that would justify doing that.
Sure.
What?
Well, someone might have said, geez, it'd be embarrassing if all these same people appeared in Netscape's equivalent in that time period. Let's have them agree not to appear at all. And then someone else might have said, no, let's not be that restrictive. Let's just make it less likely they'll appear by saying that they won't pay Netscape to appear.
But if you're going to let them appear, why would you try to stop them from paying to appear?
It lowers the probability that they'll appear.
And why does it do that, sir?
Because there's lots and lots of content providers. And so if you, in the channel bar, these gold or premier or platinum, I forget the terminology, slots, there's only visually, at least in the way we did it, room for about five or six of those. And so if you have a contract that says that they won't take money from Netscape to appear in their channel bar, given the broad universe of content providers that are out there, it's very likely that Netscape will choose to pick people who do pay them to be in their channel bar, and therefore you've lowered the probability that all of the people who appear in yours also appear in Netscape's.
So that precluding people from paying was an indirect way of trying to make sure that they didn't appear on Netscape's channel bar. Is that right?
No, now you've changed things. No. I've told you I don't know why the provision was put in there. You asked me if I could think of any set of reasoning behind it, in which I did, and that, then you changed and asked me a question about the history, which again I can't talk to you about the history.
And I don't mean to be asking just about the history. What I mean to be asking is whether you, as the chief executive officer of Microsoft, and you testified yesterday about some practices that you thought were consistent and some practices that you thought were inconsistent with company policy. And is it consistent with company policy? Let me approach it this way. To get companies like content providers to agree not to pay competitors, is that consistent with company policy if that was done?
Objection.
Well, our company policy is that when we're doing agreements, we rely on the expertise of our law and corporate affairs department to look at those and make sure that they're appropriate. That's one of the things that's done in agreements like that.
Well, other than whatever your lawyers tell you that you can't do, which I don't want to ask about because I think they'll probably object on the grounds of privilege, do you have a company policy
that addresses the issue of whether it is appropriate for Microsoft people to enter into agreements that limit companies from doing business with Microsoft's competitors.
There's no general policy that covers that area. As I said, the very competent staff we have is involved in reviewing agreements we reach.
Did you ever have any conversations with anyone about whether or not they could deal with a competitor of Microsoft?
And that's open-ended enough. I'm not sure what you mean at all.
I mean to keep it open-ended as an initial question, and then if you say no, then I don't have to go through it. But if you say yes, then I go through who you met with and what you said.
Did you ever have any conversations with anyone about whether or not they could deal with a competitor of Microsoft?
I'd say the answer is probably yes, because
if the answer
example,
is yes, then I want to
no,
ask.
No, I want to make, I think I should give an example so you understand how I've interpreted your question.
Could you give me a specific example?
Yes.
That is somebody that
IBM is a competitor of ours, and people have said to me, should we fly out and meet with IBM on this topic? And I've said, in some cases, yes, we should, and in some cases, no, we shouldn't. So that's a case where I was giving people advice on whether they should deal with a competitor of Microsoft.
Were these people within Microsoft?
People, yes.
Okay. Now, have you ever had any personal conversations with anyone other than a Microsoft employee as to whether that person's company could or should deal with a competitor of Microsoft?
Well, in terms of should, I might have said to somebody that...
No. I'm not asking what you might have said. What I'm asking is what you remember doing. Okay, I'm trying to move this along. I'm trying to stay as concrete as I can. And I'm not asking you to speculate about what you might have done.
Okay.
I'm asking you what you remember doing.
I know concrete cases where I've told customers that I think picking our product as opposed to a competitor's product is in their best interest, and so that they should pick our product. And in that sense, yes.
Have you told people that if they pick your product, they can't use a competitor's product?
If there's a technical issue about how things won't work together, possibly, but otherwise, no.
Do you know a Mr. Poole who works at Intuit?
No.
You do not?
No. I think you're confused.
You may be right. But all I need to do is get your testimony down, and then people can judge for themselves. So it is your testimony that you do not know anyone who works at Intuit, whose name is Mr. Poole. Do you know somebody at Microsoft who deals with Intuit, who is named Mr. Poole?
Yes. It's quite distinct.
Yes. The distinction is actually at the heart of what I'm going to answer. What is Mr. Poole's first name?
Will. That's at least what he goes by.
Right. And what is Mr. Will Poole's title?
I have no idea.
You have dealt directly and personally with Mr. Poole, have you not, sir?
Not until very recently.
When was the first time that you dealt directly and personally with Mr. Poole?
Well, if you mean was he ever on an email that I went back and forth on, that probably goes back, and that could be any time in the last few years. In terms of actually being in a meeting that Will was in, I think that's quite recent.
When?
Which?
Both.
I said in terms of email, that would be the last couple of years. How can I be more concrete than
I
that?
I don't know.
I answered the question.
Can you be more concrete than the last couple of years?
No.
Okay. Now, when with respect to the meeting?
I don't think I was in a meeting that he was in until maybe 2 or 3 months ago.
Did you ever have a discussion with Mr. Poole, either orally or through an email, in which you told Mr. Poole what the conditions were pursuant to which Microsoft would give Intuit access to a position on the Active desktop?
There may have been mail on that general topic, but I don't remember any specific mail.
Did you have any discussions with Mr. Poole apart from email?
No.
Did you tell Mr. Poole in words or in substance that Intuit could get access to a position on the Active desktop only if it would agree not to deal with Netscape?
There may have been some discussion about whose browser technology Intuit chose to integrate its products with. There certainly wasn't anything broadly about dealing with Netscape.
Well, let me try to be as precise as I can. Did you tell Mr. Poole in words or in substance that if Intuit wanted to have access to a position on the Active desktop, Intuit would have to agree to use Microsoft's browser technology and not use Netscape's browser technology?
I don't remember that specifically, but I do know that we were in various time periods endeavoring to get Intuit to choose the componentized IE technology as the way that Quicken, the default way that Quicken would bring up a browser. In fact, they've always supported both browsers at all times.
My question to you is whether you told Mr. Poole, either orally or through email, that in order for Intuit to get access to a position on the Active desktop, Intuit would have to agree not to use the Netscape browser technology. Did you tell Mr. Poole that orally or through email?
I know we were talking with Intuit about using IE as the default browser because of our technology. So in that sense of being the default, we were trying to get them to favor IE. But I don't remember any specific thing beyond that.
So is it your testimony that you do not remember telling Mr. Poole in words or in substance that if Intuit was to have access to a position on the Active desktop, Intuit would have to agree not to use the Netscape browser technology?
Intuit has supported the Netscape browser technology at all times, and I never thought there was any chance of avoiding them supporting the Netscape browser technology. I did think there was a chance that we would become the default, and I was hoping we could convince them that it made sense for them to make us the default.
The default browser.
That's right.
I understand that that's what you said, and I do want to explore that, but I want to first be clear that it is your testimony that you never told, or at least you don't recall ever telling, Mr. Poole, in words or in substance, that in order to get access to a position on the active desktop, Intuit would have to agree not to deal with Netscape or not to use the Netscape browser technology.
I don't remember using those exact words.
How about substance?
In terms of substance, my desire to get us to be the default did imply a favorable position for us relative to other browsers.
Is it fair to say that your position with respect to wanting to become the default browser for Intuit meant that the Microsoft browser would have a more favorable position, but it would not preclude Intuit from dealing with Netscape? Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay. Now, I want to follow up on that issue. But before I do, I want to be absolutely certain that I have your testimony now clear. And that is, leaving aside the issue of becoming the default browser, did you ever tell Mr. Poole in words or in substance that in order for Intuit to have access to a position on the active desktop, Intuit would have to agree not to deal with Netscape or not to use the Netscape browser technology? Did you ever communicate that to Mr. Poole in words or in substance?
You can't leave out the idea of the default browser. It's nonsensical to say, did you do that, but leaving out the notion of the default browser. The substance of us being the default browser is that that's a favorable position for our browser. So what you've just asked me is nonsensical.
Does making Internet Explorer the default browser preclude Intuit from dealing with Netscape?
In a specific way, yes.
In what way?
Any deal that relates to them being the default browser.
Other than a deal that involves them becoming the default browser, does it preclude Intuit from dealing with Netscape?
Not necessarily.
So that Intuit could make Internet Explorer its default browser, but still deal with Netscape with respect to Netscape's browser. Correct?
Yeah, Intuit at all times has supported the Netscape browser.
Now, I think it has to be clear from what you've just said that it is your view that becoming the default browser does not preclude Intuit from dealing with Netscape completely in terms of browsers. Is that fair?
Well, it was the issue that would have been of the most interest to us.
I'm not asking what the interest was that you had or what the issue was that was of most interest to you. What I'm asking is whether, aside from the issue of the default browser, you ever told Mr. Poole in words or in substance that in order for Intuit to get access to a position on the active desktop, Intuit would have to agree not to deal with Netscape or not to use the Netscape browser technology at all?
That question doesn't make sense to me. If you say that somebody's not the default, you're certainly affecting how they deal with you on the browser.
Could you explain what you mean by that?
We wanted to convince Intuit to make us the default browser.
And making you the default browser, does that preclude them from dealing with Netscape at all in terms of browsers?
Not in every respect, no.
Okay, not in every respect. Did you ever tell Mr. Poole, in words or in substance, that if Intuit was going to obtain access to a position on the active desktop, Intuit would have to stop supporting the Netscape browser?
Well, supporting can mean a lot of different things.
I never expected
at any time that they would not support the Netscape browser in terms of running with it, working with it, supporting it, and all those things. In terms of did I use that specific word? No, I don't have a recollection. But support can mean quite a few things.
What I'm not doing right now is asking what you meant by support. What I'm asking you is whether you told Mr. Poole that. Do you understand the distinction?
Did I use those words?
That you told Mr. Poole.
See, if you're going to ask me, did I use the exact words, you can ask me that question. Or if you're going to ask me if I said something like that, that's okay. But then I have to actually understand what you mean by the words.
Okay, let's take it one step at a time. Did you tell Mr. Poole that if Intuit was to have access to a position on the active desktop, Intuit would have to stop, quote, supporting, close quote, or could no longer, quote, support, close quote, the Netscape browser?
What does it mean when you keep going in and out of quotes like that?
It means you use the word supporting or you use the word support.
Whether I said what?
Well, whether you told Mr. Poole that if Intuit was to have a position on the active desktop, that Intuit would have to agree to stop supporting or could no longer support. That is, you use the word support the Netscape browser. Did you do that, sir, in email communications or orally or in any other form of communications to Mr. Poole?
I don't remember using those words, if that's the question.
Do you remember whether or not you used those words?
No.
What, if anything, did you tell Mr. Poole?
I'm not sure if I told Mr. Poole or Mr. Chase or Todd Nielsen or who, but I'm sure I communicated that the kind of support Intuit had been giving where Netscape was the default browser, that I didn't see that as consistent with agreeing with them for them to be featured on the active channel bar.
I think that goes to what you were saying before, which is that you wanted Microsoft's browser to become the default browser.
That's right.
Okay, now what I'm trying to do is ask whether you went beyond that in talking to Mr. Poole. Did you say to Mr. Poole that if Intuit is going to get access to a position on the active desktop, Intuit had to do something more than simply make i.e. the default browser?
That was my goal there, which of course would imply a change in how they'd been supporting Netscape as the default browser.
Right. I understand that you said you wanted IE to be the default browser, and that inevitably means that Netscape's can't be the default browser because you can only have one default browser, right?
Right.
Now, what I'm now asking is, did you go beyond that and say to Mr. Poole that if Intuit was going to get access to a position on the Active Desktop, Intuit would have to do something more than simply make IE the default browser?
I don't think so.
Did you ever say that to Mr. Chase or to anyone else?
I don't think so.
Or communicate it in email or some other communication?
I included that. So, no, I don't think so.
Okay. I thought you might have included it, but I wasn't sure, so I wanted to be clear.